Welcome to the fishbowl of our perceptions, the invisible habitat of our minds, of our way of thinking and seeing and communicating. We hope to get out of this fishbowl to see if there's a connection between our perceptions and the media we swim in. Right now, according to Marshall McLuhan, our minds are influenced by the literate print tradition. So, let's choose a book. Notice the title of this work, The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. The title reveals that the work is a classification of data about mental behavior that is somehow out of order. This is a snapshot of how print culture perceives mentation. In 1960, it listed 60 mental disorders. In the year 2000, the most recent revision lists more than 300 mental disorders. The DSM is a book filled with disorders classified by type. Distinctions are made between infantile disorders, adolescent disorders, cognitive disorders, biomedical disorders, substance abuse disorders, psychotic disorders, mood disorders, anxiety disorders, psychosomatic disorders, fictitious disorders, dissociative disorders, gender and sexual disorders, eating disorders, sleep disorders, impulse disorders, adjustment disorders, personality disorders, and disorders that don't fall into any of these disorder categories. In the 100 years since Sigmund Freud discovered the unconscious and invented psychoanalysis, not only have many dozens of disorders been invented and categorized, but many dozens of theories have been put forth to explain the nature of the human psyche, its disturbances, and its cures. Psychodynamic theories, behavioral and cognitive theories, existential, gestalt, and transformation theories. The fact that the DSM is a book, the product of a literate culture, and that it classifies mental illnesses simply shows the fragmentary, rational, and categorical nature of the print mind. Or so says Marshall McLuhan. According to McLuhan, the technologies we use to perceive, manipulate, and communicate the world around us actually shape our perceptions, our communications, our very minds. The medium is always the message. If the media determine our message, let's try to detach ourselves from our current media. Let's try to escape our fishbowl to get an idea of what kind of water our minds are swimming in. To do this, let's go back before print entered the human picture, and then let's go forward to a time when electronic media have become dominant. Let's place our culture in context. Let's go back 1,000 years to a culture that has no phonetic alphabet, no printed books, an oral culture that uses pictographs, glyphs, drawings, sculptures. Its communication would look something like this. These images or symbols aren't letters. They have no particular order. They don't force the eye to take a linear path. They don't cause the mind to think in an orderly manner. More importantly, they don't create a reader getting the meaning of a text and putting it in his or her mind. They don't create conscious individual identity. They invite tribal participation. Their identity is not visual but auditory. The auditory world is all around them, stronger than the visual world. The visual separates, the auditory connects. The visual is sequential, the auditory holistic. They are not separate individuals, they're connected. Connected to the world, and to each other, and to themselves. It may even be that their unconscious and conscious minds are connected, not separated. dreams may be part of their daily reality. The logic of the unconscious, which organizes reality symbolically, mythically, may be active during the day. They may be able to pass from dream world to physical world with no threshold. Many of their daily actions would be in the service of dream visions. What would we say of them? What would we say in the 20th century of someone who had daily visions and acted on them? If any of them had a disturbing dream, he might consult a shaman, who might see the dream as a warning, a curse, an intrusion by a demon. Would they have anxiety about their identity, the meaning of their life, their relationships? Certainly, if they were shunned by the tribe, a severe punishment for people whose identity was social. What if one of them were mad? Would the village assume she was possessed, cursed, or divinely inspired? Would they have a treatment for her, a place for her? We cannot really grasp the psychic reality of living in an acoustic culture. Marshall McLuhan inferred their psychic state by considering acoustical space in contrast to visual space. His description goes like this. For tribal man, there was no past, no history, always present. Where the visually oriented person seeks to make connections, the non-literate person sought to create intervals and gaps. Gaps invite participation by others. The spoken word resonates, involving all the senses. Acoustic space had its center everywhere, its margins nowhere. They wore masks, which were patterns of energy, group furniture, the group face. The function of art in tribal society was to connect the group with the cosmos. The unconscious was not moved into consciousness. They were able to dream awake. If we look at the dozen or so types of mental illness categorized by the DSM, we may wonder how many could apply to such people. Psychodynamic disturbances? Their conscious and unconscious were merged. Where to begin? Transference problems? Their entire world was transference. Where to begin? Existential anxiety, loss of meaning, alienation? Were they not embedded in group consciousness? Apparently, the DSM categories fit the disturbances that would come with visual, literate, print cultures. Let's jump ahead in time to the heyday of psychotherapy, the 20th century. Here we are in the 20th century. What have we missed? Well, the Latin alphabet was invented around 700 BC, the runic alphabet in 150 AD. The Latin alphabet conquered Europe around 700 AD. This forced our minds to string letters into words, words into sentences, and sentences into manuscripts. With Gutenberg's invention of the printing press in 1450, putting things in logical order was seeping into everyone's mind. This gave us the Industrial Revolution and science. By the beginning of the 20th century, literate people had logical, inquiring minds, seeking to find the nature and causes of things. One of the heroes of this story, Sigmund Freud, would investigate the nature of the human psyche and the cause of neurosis. But let's stay out of our fishbowl as long as we can. The process we went through in creating an alphabet, writing manuscripts, and publishing books had a McLuhan-esque effect on us. These media became, in some way, our message. Let's turn once again to McLuhan to hear what he considers the effects of print technology. Print teaches privacy, self-reliance, initiative. Everything we prize in the Western world, individualism, private judgment, a unique point of view, all these are favored by the printed word. Print teaches the habit of sequential analysis and of fragmentation of all motion into static units. The literary mind tries to connect and classify mythic and symbolic materials by reducing what is oral to visual forms of order. While language extends all our senses, writing limits words to the visual. The idea of words corresponding to reality, the idea of matching, is characteristic only of highly literate cultures in which the visual sense is dominant. Print culture leads to mechanization, the industrial forms of mass production. All technologies create climates of thought and feeling. Mass production alienates man rather than involving man. Industrial and print technology have a profoundly fragmenting effect on human sensibilities. Print also retrieves the past, making the entire world of antiquity available in book form to individual readers. It permits a high degree of analytic specialization and the examination of the inner life. Consciousness and dreams have a structure that can be aesthetically enjoyed. The dream world in the Freudian decades seemed to offer a refreshing organic spontaneity in the midst of mechanical and industrial development. Marshall McLuhan noted that every new technology will retrieve something from the past and make it new again. Indeed, almost every 20th century psychological theory retrieved symbols and archetypes from the distant past. Freud retrieved the story of Oedipus and his mother. Jung retrieved the entire pantheon of Greek mythology. Current theories retrieve shamanism, Indian tantrism, Zen Buddhism, Greek theater, and Asclepian homeopathic techniques. We might wonder if the DSM actually sets out to define the maladies not of human beings, but of print culture itself. Alienation, the loss of mythic unconscious, the loss of oral involvement, fragmentation, separation. These are all effects McLuhan attributes to print. And it is interesting that the cure for all of this is a return to the oral. Psychoanalysis and psychotherapy use the talking cure. The 20th century began with print and ended with digital technology. The telephone was developed commercially in the 1940s, television in 1950, the cell phone in 1980, along with home computers and CDs. The internet became public with the World Wide Web in 1991. By 2000, everything was digital, from digital cameras to cell phones to television. The 20th century ended with electronics and new media converging, overlapping, bringing digital capture and creation to everyone. It was a century in transition from visual print culture to a new tactile electronic culture. The effects of the introduction of electronic media into a mechanized print culture confused everyone. Educators found themselves facing kids who were agitated, inattentive, and bored in class. Advertisers were ecstatic, as were politicians. These two groups learned quickly how to use the new media. While children embraced video games, downloaded music, and chatted on the internet, adults found themselves more and more lost. Psychotherapists were flooded with people suffering from alienation, loss of meaning, loss of relatedness, loss of self-esteem. Could it be that the DSM was actually tracking the psychic effects of a culture in technological transition? Among the intelligentsia, two main figures stood up to figure out what was going on: Marshall McLuhan in Canada and Jean Baudrillard in France. Baudrillard noted that electronic images no longer referred to reality, but were now free-floating, detached. He called them simulacra. These simulacra were everywhere, from the war in Iraq to toothpaste commercials, suggesting there was a reality behind them when there was not. He compared our life in the world of simulacra to that of an astronaut floating in space with images projected onto the visor of his helmet, a return to Plato's Cave of Illusion. We should compare Baudrillard's vision with that of Pierre Beauchesne, who in 1793 described the novel, a new medium, this way. The novel is the medium of perversion of all sensibility. It detaches the soul from all that is immediate and leads it to an imaginary world of sentiments violent in proportion to their unreality. Does each shift to a new medium take us further away from the real? Or are we simply unprepared for the soul's strange journey through time? Marshall McLuhan struggled to discern patterns of change in our psyches, in our sensory and emotional environment, with the change in media. He, too, sensed the unreality of the media extensions of mankind. He said, "All media, from language to television, alter the patterns of perception, such that all experience becomes a pseudo-event. That is why silence has appeared as more noble." McLuhan suggested that a new kind of identity is being formed in the electronic matrix of instantaneous communication. We've switched from a visual Euclidean space to a resonant quantum space. The message and form of electronic information pattern is the simultaneous. We must move from linear causal thinking to configuration thinking. In the new situation of being with, you don't have a point of view. You merely identify at all levels with your whole being. People become so profoundly involved in each other, they lose their sense of private identity. The impact of electronic culture on highly literate people is especially disturbing. For them, as McLuhan pointed out, the human city is a wasteland of abandoned images. Everyone is a nobody. No one has a place in the world. New technologies create one environment upon another. As for tribal man, there is for us no history. All is present. Now let's move ahead a few decades and imagine a world in which the development, convergence, and ubiquity of electronic media have been more or less completed. The 21st century equivalent of the Gutenberg Bible. Let's go to 2055. Okay, here we are in 2055. Wait a minute, is this 2055? It looks like the past. I think we failed to project into the future. And there's a good reason for this. McLuhan pointed out that we always see the future in terms of the past, like driving a car while looking out the rearview mirror. Radios were called wireless sets. Automobiles were called horseless carriages. Flashlights were called electric torches. And digital creation stations were called computers. Can we not see the future without referring to the past? Thus warned, let's try again. Here we are in 2055. What's it like? Well, the sun still shines, birds still sing, and rain still falls, making puddles. Among humans, communication and information has become instantaneous. Anyone anywhere can access information from anywhere else, or send information of their own for everyone else to use. Everyone has become a personal broadcaster and receiver. Images, movies, music, games, thoughts, emails, any electronic creation whatsoever is sent to known and unknown clusters of recipients and received from known and unknown clusters of senders. Each person radiates his or her interests and creativity to others who are immediately present. In this angelic realm of incorporeal communication, personal identity is projected as electronic images. Different projections for different electronic environments. Different environments for different desires. Information overload is dealt with by compressing information into sound and image clips, which convey moods, thoughts, emotions. These compressed feeling clips are similar to ancient myths. McLuhan said, "There's always more than you can cope with. Youth have devised a strategy for dealing with this quite apart from just inattention. They've devised a much more potent strategy of myth-making. A myth is an instantaneous insight that includes all the stages of a process." Incompatibility between the written word and electronic communication has intensified. Typing is slow, spelling uncertain. Compressed forms developed from leet-speak and web slang. This says, "In my humble opinion, it's probably a newbie at home. The problem is in the chair, not in the computer. Goodbye." Numbers or symbols are used for letters they resemble or sound like. Rules of grammar are forgotten. Typing mistakes are incorporated into the language. We may wonder what this has done to traditional forms of writing, like novels or poetry. Marshall McLuhan saw the future of printed books as data or information resources. Novels of the future are multimedia video games like Myst, with collective interaction replacing individual reading, group identity replacing personal identity. Creative human encounters happen in virtual environments, like Second Life, where participants create an identity, purchase land, build homes, have parties, do business, or simply play. As McLuhan said, "The goal-oriented work culture wanes as objectives mix and change in an electronic flux, and play becomes the new tool for exploring the world of information. Without play, there looms the danger of madness. Individual identity gives way to role-playing, and secrecy becomes impossible." Let's look at secrecy and private identity in 2055. Members of virtual communities rate each other's looks and behavior. This rating is carried by each member for all others to see. On the web, hackers and downloaders rate each other's willingness to share in the quality of their products. Meanwhile, in the real world, banks, governments, and insurance companies are still rating people's worthiness. These data banks of ratings have created public profiles or identities of each person, an external identity that what we used to call individual identity cannot compete with. How do people cope with all this? McLuhan said, "By becoming super conscious of what's going on." He wrote, "Electronic forms lead us to deeper regional cultures because of the electronic circuitry that involves us deeper and deeper in ourselves. In order to live with ourselves at such depth, in such instant feedback situations, we have to understand everything. We must dispel all unconscious aspects of our lives altogether. The easygoing lolling around in the lap of the unconscious cannot endure." Let's try to summarize the psychic shifts that have taken place by 2055. Personal identity has become group identity. Appearance is manufactured out of fantasy. Everyone is creating a profile of everybody else. Secrecy is impossible. Everyone is sending and receiving mythic dream messages, and everyone is highly conscious of everything. Where does this put the unconscious? Where does this put psychodynamic psychotherapy? try and answer this, McLuhan reminds us to think contextually, not logically. He said, "Electronic culture is a culture of patterns, not goals. All satisfactions will be derived informationally from broadcast images. So, there can no longer be a goal of mental health. Perhaps, though, there can be adjustment or maladjustment to patterns. Perhaps the DSM may have to change its title slightly, dropping the word diagnostic, since there's nothing to diagnose, and dropping the word statistical, since there's nothing to count, and dropping the word manual, since books are a thing of the past, and dropping the word disorder, since nothing is ordered anymore. It gets to keep the word mental, however, as a charming and provocative witticism from the literate past." A new psychotherapy is in its infancy in 2055. It uses virtual environments and fantasy identities to allow people to act out their problems, visualize their dreams, picture their desires, and stand side by side with a therapist in the distorted reality of one person's contextualized life. Psychotherapy creates virtual intimacy between a client in Boston and a therapist in Vancouver. The use of fantastic avatars and unreal environments, both by the client and the therapist, unleashes more profound psychic effects than merely sitting together. The ancient oral talking cure persists, aided by the retrieval of tribal masks, bodily chants, and sacred pictures flooding the psychic landscape. By 2055, the unconscious has found a limitless stage to play on. The entire world has become an artifact into which unconscious contents are being poured. While print technology and mechanization began to destroy our world, McLuhan thought humankind would begin to heal the planet in tune with our collective psyche, that we would see it again as a mythic entity and work to restore it. Whether that will happen, we, or our descendants, shall see. Back to our fishbowl, if we ever really left it. Using Marshall McLuhan's precept that the medium is the message, we may begin to see the psyche and therapy in a new light. Ancient oral culture brought the unconscious and conscious together. Identity was communal. The world was a magical present. Right now, at the beginning of the electronic age, psychotherapy seems to be retrieving oral forms to help heal the fragmentation brought about by the phonetic alphabet, print culture, and mass production. The talking cure brings the unconscious to consciousness, helps people search for meaning in the shifting sands of technological transformation. As our electronic media become pervasive and push print culture to the background, focusing on cause and effect will wane. Rational categorizing will wane, and the exploration of roles and environments will be the order of the day. Psychotherapy will play a part in all this, but what part remains to be seen? Very soon, new forms of mental disorder may be added to the DSM. Interactive media dysfunction, obsessive literacy, logical patterning disorder. And those who cling to literacy and individualism and rational order will be seen as dinosaurs. How will psychodynamic theory progress in a non-Euclidean mental space? We might ask how creationism progressed with the advent of science. And what happens to the physical world of the senses in the future? Will there be small groups assembled somewhere in a drawing room, listening to someone play the cello? Will they be podcasting it to their friends in Brazil? Will teenagers hold hands in the park after 3 months of virtual sex? Will parents have the literacy skills to read bedtime stories to their children? Will they want to? Will they need to? As humans accept electronic media as perceptual extensions, as life becomes ever more present, ever more shared, as personal identity melds into tribal identity, what becomes of personal boundaries, of personality, of the desire to be? If oral culture made us spiritual and the book culture made us rational, will electronics make us superficial, ephemeral, unfocused? Will our psyches adapt to the rush of data, or will they evolve us into some sort of breathing, chip-implanted, hybrid electronic mutants? In 1968, prescient to the transformation to come, Philip K. Dick wrote a book which he called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? It may not be long before we find out. But all this nostalgia of the rearview mirror can betray us. Literate culture is dying, new digital forms are emerging. The fishbowl we knew is disappearing, and another, hopefully more sustaining, will take its place. It's all the soul's journey, after all.